We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller along with Charlie Long here. Welcoming in now Joe Healy, D1 Baseball, college baseball writer, also SEC Extra on D1Baseball.com. Joe, how you been, man?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me on again.
Always definitely appreciate your time. And we haven't really, our hands are hovering over the panic button with LSU baseball right now. Not ready to press it, but yet, just yet. But obviously, man, oh man, this is a monster series for this team at a tough Tennessee park where, you know, the ball loves to fly out of. LSU obviously has some pop in their lineup, but we just haven't seen enough consistency from this Tigers lineup. And even worse, their pitching has been letting them down lately. So what are your initial impressions of this matchup going into the weekend?
Yeah, it's a tough matchup for what has ailed LSU so far to this point. I mean, we thought the pitching was going to be such a big part of what they were going to do to win games this year, and it just hasn't happened. I mean, there are success stories. Luke Holman has established himself as a real Friday guy. Griffin Herring has been a weapon in the bullpen, but there's not been enough of that. And so now you're going into a Tennessee, like you mentioned, ballpark that plays small. Tennessee loves playing there. Tennessee's hitting something like 330 in SEC play. They have 89 home runs already over the course of the season. It's just a really bad matchup for a team that's trying to find itself. And you're right that LSU's really backed up against the wall at this point. It's too early to totally, you know, say that this is going to be a lost season or that things have gotten away from them. But you got to at least win a game this weekend, because if you come back at 3-12, that probably is a little bit too much of a hole to dig out of if they're going to be a host team, an Omaha team, something like that. So this weekend's big, if for no other reason than, like, you just want to see LSU fight. Because honestly, this isn't totally a talent issue. Are they as talented as last year? No, probably not, because, you know, you don't have Skeens, Cruz, et cetera. But this team is talented enough. They should have a better record in SEC play than 3-9. So you just like to see them kind of fight and show some of that so that it portends good things for the second half.
Joe, they've had some rough losses in SEC play, as you know, but they've also had some blowout losses. And, you know, I've kind of questioned the mental fortitude of the team. We talked with Kendall Rogers last night, the managing editor of D1 Baseball, and he kind of pointed to the fact that that Jay had to take away cell phones at some point. It's just kind of a weird storyline that's been following this team, is that, you know, they'll lose like a really tough game two, and then they'll just get blown out and run ruled in game three to some teams. And that's kind of been the story of this LSU squad this year. But you have to flip the script at some point. And you're going to Tennessee, and we were talking last hour about this, Joe, and we mentioned, like, I would expect a lot of runs scored. I know that LSU's offense has been inconsistent, in being a nice word, but they still have pop in the bat. You look at Jared Jones, you look at Tommy White, you look at Hayden Travinsky. Now, Tennessee, like, as you mentioned, with they love hitting in that ballpark. They've got 89 home runs this season, which is tied with Georgia atop the SEC. LSU's got to match that. They got to match the offensive production, because the ball's going to fly out this weekend. And Jay kind of pointed out to limiting, you know, free bases so that those home runs that they do give up are solo shots instead of, you know, two-run, three-run bombs, even grand slams. So at the same time, if you're LSU's bats, getting walks, like having good at bats and getting on base to where their home runs, you know, fly out and score a couple extra runs. Joe, their hitting with runners in scoring position has been bad, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But if you can earn some walks and get some home runs and get those extra runs against this Tennessee squad, I think it could serve them really well this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And because at times this season, they've done enough offensively, right? In two of the three games against Vanderbilt, you scored enough runs to where you feel like you at least had a chance to win the series. Now, in the finale of the Vanderbilt series, three runs and you get run ruled. That's not great. But you scored 10 runs in the first game, 6 in the second, and Vanderbilt got great pitching too. So, you know, you feel good about that, but you're right. It's been a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde deal. I was there for the Arkansas series, and those three games were really close. Like, that might be as close as anybody's played Arkansas yet this season in a three-game series in terms of the score lines, but you just didn't get anything out of it. So, you know, they show up sometimes, but it's just not enough against Arkansas, and they have other series where, man, they probably should have, you know, probably should have won the series at State, for example, at least on paper. But they just did a couple games. They just didn't seem to show up like you would expect them to. So it has been a little bit strange, but I think your hunch is right, where you're going to have to win some ugly games this weekend. Like, you're not, you know, unless Luke Holman just pitches out of his absolute mind, which is possible, but I'm guessing, you know, against that offense, it's going to be tough to do. You're going to have to be able to win a 10-8 game. And the key to that, as you alluded to, is don't make errors. Don't give up free bases. Make them basically hit 7 solo home runs a game to beat you. And, you know, look, Tennessee might do that, but at least that's, you know, you're just getting beat by better players and not giving it to them.
So then I guess that's my question for you, Joe, is what is the X factor for LSU on the mound this weekend? They already announced that Luke Holman's going to be throwing game 2 and that Gage Jump will be throwing game 1. So they kind of changed things up a little bit from what it was in the past weekends. Gage Jump, who's typically been their Saturday guy, will be in fact going tomorrow night, and they're saving Holman for that game 2 start. I think you're looking at, you know, potentially Jump getting off to a good start for the Tigers and then Holman as well. And then game 3, if someone can step up, if either one of those two games are lost, I mean, worst case scenario is that they drop both of them. I mean, who are you looking to step up on the mound? We talked about Thatcher Hurd, and he's a name that he was so great in the Omaha run last year, but this year he's been pretty poor at times. He's had some bad luck as well, but that's a name that really needs to solidify that third starting spot for this Tiger bunch to really be legit.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think we have to acknowledge that, you know, maybe the run in Omaha, as talented as Thatcher Hurd is, maybe the run in Omaha is the outlier, as opposed to maybe that being a sign of things to come. But he's talented enough, like, he's going to have to play a role on this team if LSU is going to have any kind of shot to do some of the stuff that it wanted to do before the season, challenging to get to Omaha, that stuff. Like, he's going to have a role. And that was kind of the case last year, and he figured it out. So I get that. Jump is also key for me because he's been pretty good this year. Now, the numbers aren't as good in SEC play, but that's true for most pitchers. The thing is, though, he still isn't getting deep into games. And I think some of that early on this season was just trying to be a little extra careful with him because he hadn't thrown in a real game in a long time. So just being a little bit extra careful. Now, though, I think we're at the point where you're going to need him, especially given the struggles of this team. I mean, he's got 8 appearances and has 31 and two-thirds innings. I'm not a math major, but that's less than 4 innings per appearance. At some point, you've got to try to get 5 or 6 out of him because the reality is he's one of your best arms. So it might be 6 innings, 4 earned runs, and that might just have to be okay. And you just hope you get enough offense. But to me, that, not to put it on him because he's pitching pretty well, but when you're only getting 3 2/3, 4 1/3 innings out of a starting pitcher, now you're going to the bullpen really early. And as much trouble as they've had, you know, cycling through, you know, Justin Lohr and Christian Little and Javon Coleman and, you know, all these guys to try to find somebody other than Griffin Herring to get big outs, they're exposing a lot of relievers to a lot of innings where they're just kind of getting pounded. So it feels like they need someone other than Luke Holman to give them some length. So I actually look at Gage Jump as a guy that I'm looking to, if I'm Jay Johnson, say, hey, look, we just need a little more from you right now.
Joe, looking at the pitching situation for Tennessee, their game 1, like Charlie just mentioned, is still TBA right now. I know that A.J. Russell has remained sidelined, got some forearm soreness for the Vols. Any expectations from you on who Tennessee could end up tossing game 1 tomorrow?
I think it's going to be a staff day regardless. I think who starts that game isn't as important as what they're able to, how many outs they're able to get from guys so that they can save bullpen for the rest of the weekend.
Gotcha,
Let me put it this way. I would not be surprised if we see a lot of Nate Sneed, who is kind of their long reliever. You know, they've been using him in a piggyback role. Now, the tricky part about that is, you know, they've been using him as a piggyback on Xander Seacrest, who is in the rotation this weekend. So if you want to move Sneed to being able to use him in long relief to open the series, you're going to lose him potentially to back up Seacrest, who also isn't a guy who's going to get deep in the game. And that's where, for Tennessee, A.J. Causey really hitting the skids. I think his ERA is over 10 in SEC play now. He was really good early in the season, but it has not been good the last few weeks. And so him struggling the way he is, where they have to pull him from the rotation, has knock-on effects now. Because you can't just bank on, hey, let's use Nate Sneed, who's our best arm in the bullpen. Let's wait and use him after Seacrest, and we can maybe get four out of one and 4 out of the other, and we've covered most of the game. So I think it'll just be a staff day, but don't be shocked if you see Nate Sneed come out early in the game, and they're just going to leave him in there basically until the pitch count just gets too high.
Joe, looking at this Tennessee offense, obviously Blake Burke stands out with hitting 410 this season. I mean, we talked with you, I think, before the season started about Billy Amick, the transfer from Clemson, the third baseman, he's actually missed a couple weeks in a row with an appendix injury. And I think that the latest report from Coach Vitello is that he could be back this weekend, but the biggest thing is him playing defense. He may be used in potentially a DH role, but he's also hitting great this season. I mean, this Tennessee team, their numbers offensively just jump off the page to you. They're 338, number one in the SEC. They have 94 doubles, 3 triples, 89 home runs. Once again, as I mentioned earlier, they're tied with Georgia, first in the league in homers. So, I mean, this offense, like we talked about, LSU needs to match it because they're going to have to win some types of 9-7, 10-8 games this weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of insane on a number of levels. Consider the following. You know, this team is hitting, like you said, 338 overall, hitting 331 in conference, which is to be hitting 331 against SEC pitching, regardless of who you played, is really impressive stuff. But consider they are doing it, like you mentioned, last couple weeks without Billy Amick. Cannon Peebles, who came in as a transfer from NC State, who everybody thought, okay, this is a guy. He's going to hit third for him. He's going to catch every day. Like, that really hasn't worked out. I mean, he's hitting close to 100 in SEC play, has really kind of lost the starting catching job at this point. So those two things don't go the way they expect, and yet here they are, where they are hitting as well as we could have expected, probably actually better. And they have probably 13 or 14 guys they trust on the position player side. They honestly don't have enough at-bats to go around. I mean, they've got Ariel Antigua, who's a middle infielder, who was one of their highly ranked recruits coming into the year, who just – he got hurt to start the year, and he just hasn't been able to get in the lineup, right? I mean, that's just one example. It's 1-9. It's a tough order. There's no breaks in it. You know, I could just kind of go on and on about the impressive stuff that we've seen from Tennessee. And – you know, this team could be a juggernaut if they could figure the pitching out, and that's really been the question so far for them.
Joe, just curious if the Tiger team can end up pulling out a 2-game or even a, you know, be great if they pull a sweep off in Tennessee. Is there still that, you know, long shot of LSU being able to be a host come regionals?
Oh, sure. I mean, when you consider that, you know, look at what Auburn did last year. Now, Auburn wasn't in quite as much of a hole as LSU is now. I think their bottom was 5-10 in the SEC, but they ended up hosting, right? So LSU's only a couple wins off that pace. So yeah, I mean, when teams that finish 16-14 in SEC play regularly host. And so look, that means you're going to have to get going pretty quick here. I mean, that's what, 13-5 down the stretch. I mean, that's tough, but like, could they do that? Sure. They're talented enough to do it. So I won't say never say never on that, but you have to get a result this weekend. It feels like, I mean, you can't be looking at, you know, 4-11 probably and feel real good about that happening. But look, you know, the beauty and the downside of the SEC is, you know, you're going to play a lot of good teams. That's going to give you a lot of chances to win big games. It's going to keep your RPI high. So it's just all about, can you win enough SEC games?
And then, Joe, looking at LSU's hitting issues this year, a lot of them can be tied to their hitting with runners in scoring position. Against Mississippi State, they were 3 of 24. Against Florida, they were 6 of 28. Against Arkansas, 4 of 18. And Vanderbilt, 7 of 31. In total in SEC play, 101 at-bats with runners in scoring position, 20 hits. They're hitting 198. I mean, how difficult is it for them to turn that stat around? Because obviously that's so crucial, especially against SEC pitching. When your pitching staff has been getting shelled at times, you got to be able to match the intensity of an opposing offense. And LSU this year, I mean, you can point to that number by itself, Joe, 198 with runners in scoring position as a reason for that 3-9 start in SEC play.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, yeah, it's going to be tough to do a whole lot when you're hitting under 200, you know, in that situation. And I think it speaks less to the fact that this team's not coming through in the clutch. Oh, that's true. But I think it speaks more to, at any given time, there have only been two or three guys who have been swinging it really well. You know, there were times when Tommy White wasn't swinging it well, then he gets going. Steven Milam was hot early in the season, not so much now. Jared Jones has had some ups and downs. Michael Braswell's leading the team in average right now at SEC play, which I don't think any of us saw coming. So when you only have two or three guys going good at one time, you know, those couple guys get on in the order, and then the lineup turns over to guys who aren't swinging it very well. And so when your lineup's not very deep, and you've got guys who are kind of struggling all at the same time, just ask Florida. They're kind of in the same position right now. You end up in these situations where it seems like every time you have something good going, here comes some guy who's 4 for his last 24. And that's kind of how those things happen. So I think it's less that the guys are gripping a little bit and pressing, although that could be part of it. I think it's just more to do with the fact that the lineup just doesn't have the length it had last year.
Joe, who do you see as the top, I would say, five teams, I guess, in the SEC right now? Obviously, Arkansas and Kentucky, both 11-1 in conference play. I think the Hogs are clearly, you know, the cream of the crop right there. Are you a believer in this Kentucky team?
Yeah, I am. So, because here's what's different about them. I mean, one is that last year they did a lot of small ball, and that was kind of their identity. Well, this year they're a team that can do that, but they don't necessarily have to. Now, they're not hitting a lot of home runs still, but they play in a big ballpark, but they're barreling the ball. I mean, their batting averages are high. Like, I've watched them play quite a bit. Like, they're making solid contact. It's just not home run contact. They're more physical this year than they were last year. They've also got some stuff in the bullpen they didn't have last year. Like, last year, you know, there's a lot of pitchability stuff for Kentucky's pitching staff. This year's a little bit different where, look, I mean, they're not Vanderbilt running out there with that quality of arms, but they do have more than they've had. So I am a believer. Now, am I going to bet on them winning the SEC? No, but I do think this is real and not just like some sort of schedule or luck-based mirage. As far as a pecking order, honestly, it's Arkansas 1, Gap, Texas A&M 2, and then a gap. And then you throw in Vanderbilt, Tennessee, and then whoever you think is the next best team, which that's where it gets kind of ugly, because for that fifth spot, we're talking about a Florida team that's kind of fighting it right now, Mississippi State team that's been pretty good, but they're still, you know, I'm still not sure how much I want to buy into that. So I feel good about that top four plus Kentucky, of course, so that's the five. Once we get past those five to the sixth spot, that's where I really start to look at and really not have any clear vision of who that team is.
Yeah, you mentioned Florida, Joe. That's a team that I think I'm out on right now, at least. And I think a lot of people kind of are, too. Getting swept against Missouri was one thing, but then going on the road to Florida State and getting embarrassed the way they did in the midweek. And they've lost a lot of midweek games, Joe. But, I mean, going against an in-state rival like FSU and the showing that they had, like their pitching staff just getting lit up guy after guy that Sully just threw out there, it just wasn't a good showing. And this is a, you know, Florida team that just a couple weeks ago came into Baton Rouge and took 2 of 3 from LSU. And I think we were all pretty high on them at that point, but now they've fallen to 6-6 in conference play after that kind of embarrassing sweep against Missouri, who LSU is going to, in fact, see next week after this series against, obviously, Tennessee. So Florida's fall from grace, I guess, has been pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. I mean, the issue that we knew they were going to have is they're young on the mound. Now, they're extremely talented on the mound, but they're extremely young, and that's come back to bite them, and that's a big reason why the midweek games have been such a problem, because it's a lot of freshmen on Tuesdays. And when you're playing a good Florida State team, that's going to happen, but they've also got losses to UCF and Stetson and, you know, North Florida. Like, so that's not great. What they did over the weekend against Missouri was kind of new, because they had been winning their series. But last weekend was a little bit different, and I can point to the fact they're hitting .232 in conference play, and then I'll quickly run through, like, you know, Colby Shelton's hitting .224 in conference, Cade Curlin .224, Dale Thomas .185, Luke Heyman .152. Like, those are guys they're expected to be kind of right in the middle of everything, and they're just not swinging it well right now, and it feels a little like, if Jack Caglione doesn't go, you know, supernova in a game offensively, they're kind of stuck in neutral. I mean, I was at that Missouri series last weekend, and they just exploited holes in their swings. I mean, Missouri doesn't have big-time stuff on the mound, but they pitched it well. They clearly had a pretty clear scouting report on how they were going to pitch Florida, and they just executed it. And Florida didn't have a lot of adjustments. They didn't really have a lot of approach at the plate. It was a lot of grip and rip. And so it was a lot of strikeouts and a lot of ground balls and a lot of weak fly balls. And it just looked really ugly for Florida. And it kind of feels like a team that just kind of needs, much like LSU, it feels like part of this is also just kind of the mental hurdle of, like, man, we're really losing games here that we did not expect to lose, and having to reset from that.
And then looking at this weekend, Joe, we already have Mizzou at Georgia started, and Kentucky at Auburn has also started so far. But this weekend's, like, slate, I guess you would say, of SEC games, the biggest one for me, obviously Vanderbilt at Texas A&M just stands out like a sore thumb, as far as also Arkansas and Alabama. What do you think about this weekend in conference play?
Yeah, the Texas A&M Vanderbilt is obviously the big one, like you mentioned. And I'm kind of fascinated by, you know, Vanderbilt. A lot of people jumped off the bandwagon, kind of myself included, after they got swept by South Carolina a few weekends ago. But since then, they've been really good. And it seems like they're figuring things out on the mound. Carter Holton continues to kind of be quietly excellent. His ERA is right about 2 in SEC play. Bryce Cunningham and Grayson Carter, while not perfect, are better pitchers than they have been in the past. And those are two massive, massive arms. Freshman Ethan McIlvain, who did not get off to a great start, has started to figure it out. He's a real weapon in the bullpen now. seems like things there are coming together. And look, the offense is not the most physical offense in the SEC. That's an understatement. But they are swinging it well in terms of batting average. They're making contact. They're getting on base. They're athletic. But the pitching is going to be where it's at, and it's a tough, tough task. A&M's lineup is not quite Tennessee's lineup. It doesn't have that much depth, but the top three of Braden Montgomery, Jace LaViolette, Gavin Gerhovac, that's about as good a 1-2-3 as you're going to have in college baseball. So how well the Vanderbilt pitching staff on the road deals with the top of the A&M lineup feels like the key matchup there in that series.
Joe, awesome stuff. As always, appreciate your time and have a great one.
Hey, thanks. You too, fellas.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Healy, college baseball writer for D1Baseball.com. Also, SEC Extra on D1Baseball.com. Definitely go check out his work there.
The D1
always
baseball
great info.
Guys rock,
they
Steve.
Are right.
They're the
great
best.
Lineup. No questions about their lineup.
Yeah, Kendall, Mark, Joe, every time we get them on, they're just encyclopedias of information in college baseball.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.